listen, think, learn, grow. Listen, think, learn, grow.
This is Empower the Spirit with Dr. Douglas Kelly.
And a good evening to you. Today is Sunday, June 26, 2011. My name is Doug Kelly. I'm so glad you could join me this evening. Empower the Spirit is a weekly broadcast of the Metaphysical Church of Humanistic Science. It's part of our regular church services. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit. And that's exactly what we try to do every show. This program addresses metaphysical topics with a focus on a variety of practical life skills. It's a program about enhancing the human condition, both spiritually and physically. And I would like to welcome those listeners who are listening live to the show tonight, as well as those who are listening to the archive. On the program tonight, I'm going to talk about what do you believe, remaining grounded in the metaphysics field. There's also going to be a guided meditation session. We did one last week as well. It's going to be about just short of 17 minutes, but it's a pretty good one, and the theme is on self-confidence. And then following this program at the top of the hour is Dr. Vicki's Psychic Perspective. She will be taking your calls for spiritual and psychic insights. So if you have questions, she has answers, as they say, or at least she'll make a good attempt. Nah, she'll do you well. And I will be joining her on that program tonight as well. So let's get into the first part of the program, the topic, what do you believe, remaining grounded in the metaphysics field? This program, or I should say this part of the program, really deals with belief in different metaphysical topics and remaining grounded, as the title implies. This program is based on the Metaphysical Church of Humanistic Science Principle of Belief 8. And let me just read that principle to you so you have an understanding of what it is. We believe in the value of practical education in metaphysics, metapsychology, and life skills as a means of empowering the human spirit and enhancing the human condition. We maintain an open but grounded mind to potential realities as yet undescribed by science. So that is principle number 8. And I want to talk about various parts of that. Just for a moment, I'd like to talk about education. I'll address that in different future presentations, but I do want to say a few words on it. You know, it's no secret that education raises one's quality of life. It reduces crime. It allows one to gain a higher paying job, reduces poverty and dependence on state aid. It reduces teen pregnancies, and it elevates self-esteem. And these are just a few of the different things that it does. Life is about learning. It's about growing. And, you know, when we stop growing, we die. It's like entropy. You know, it's that phenomenon in the universe where things go back to a state of inert matter, you know. And the point is, if we stop learning, we stop growing, we start dying. The self-improvement industry has grown considerably over the last, 100 years or so anyway, with a lot of books, classics like The Science of Getting Rich by Wallace D. Wattles. That was published back in 1910. How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie back in 1936. Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill in 1938. And another one, one of my favorites, is Successful Achievement by Sidney N. Bremer, a four-volume collection. That was first published back in 1966. And there are many others. And, of course, there are even modern-day folks offering different points in self-improvement. They're in the bookstores. But in a very real sense, these books that I just mentioned and many others are metaphysical in nature because they explored and explore how to improve life in one's existence, and they also explore practical life skills, how to make your life better. Many of them even cover different aspects of consciousness, and there's just so many of them out there. There's so many good ones. This is something that I've taught, this self-improvement thing, obviously, for many decades, and I've taught thousands of managers and leaders in a crucial concept. And this concept is that if you want better employees, teach them life skills. Why is this true? Because when people are educated in practical life skills, they have fewer problems than those who are not. Those who practice good life skills also have fewer relationship problems. They have fewer problems at home. And any manager will tell you that an employee with severe problems at home, well, is a problem. Not as productive, reliable, or easy to deal with as somebody who has a peaceful home life. Now, this concept is not limited to managers and employees. It includes everyone. If you want better teenagers who are prepared for adulthood, teach them life skills. If you want better volunteers, teach them life skills. If you want better and more successful, if you want to be better and more successful in life, learn life skills. So what are these so-called life skills? There are many. They include communication skills, how to communicate more effectively, how to manage your time, how to set and achieve goals, how to understand others and get along better. This is diversity training. How about critical thinking skills, which will help you to solve problems and find solutions much better? Other skills include, or other practical life skills include, taking responsibility for yourself, for your actions. Learning how to speak in public is another one. There are many of these life skills that help us to get along better in life. I can't say enough about the importance of these life skills as a significant aspect of metaphysical training. Yes, it is metaphysical training because self-knowledge leads to self-empowerment and enlightenment. And this, in turn, enhances one's ability to think more deeply on other metaphysical concepts. And there are many of those, too. Therefore, metaphysical humanistic science supports and promotes education, and this includes all aspects of metaphysical knowledge with an emphasis on practical life skills. That's what the church is built on. That's what the Metaphysics Institute degree program is built on. And I am perhaps a bit different in this approach than most other schools and perhaps many other metaphysicians or metaphysicists, whichever they prefer. I believe that if you want to become more enlightened, become more self-complete, I believe that if you want to become better in life, you got to start with you. And that's the first life skill you need to learn, is to accept yourself unconditionally, to learn to love yourself, to fall in love with yourself, so to speak. And I'm not talking about narcissism or egotism. I'm just talking about having a healthy self-concept. That's where it all begins, and that is knowledge. That's education. We need, so many of us need to learn how to view ourselves properly, because so many folks are plagued with low self-esteem, or what I call them esteem, because, you know, they're always looking at for the approval of others in order to feel better about themselves. So education, absolutely imperative. Life skills, absolutely imperative. It's part of what helps us to grow toward enlightenment. Now, the other aspect of principle number 8 that I mentioned was remaining grounded in your metaphysical beliefs. This is another thing that sets the church apart and the school apart, is taking a grounded approach to things. And I'm going to talk about this in a little more depth here. I first want to lay the foundation for it, and that's belief. Belief is arguably the most powerful and potent force in human nature. Think about it. Belief has started every war fought in the history of humanity. It is responsible for everyone's success or failure in life. Belief at one time killed many alleged witches, and during the Inquisition, many thousands of innocent people with contrary, quote, beliefs. Belief once told us we could not fly, and then belief told us we could, so we did. We are indeed the sum of our beliefs. Belief is also responsible for all the good and all the bad in both science and religion. And I will go so far as to say that science and religion are principally the same thing. You might be thinking, what? How can that be? Well, in this context, they both often approach life and metaphysical topics. I know it's hard to believe about religion, but they both approach these things with preconceived notions, and they are both essentially closed-minded, both science and religion. So they're essentially two sides of the same coin. And I'm going to talk about each one of them, a couple of things on each one of them, as to why this is true and why we need to remain open-minded, which is not usually a problem with those in the metaphysics field. It's keeping the feet on the ground, which is the issue, but we'll talk about that too. Let's touch on religion first. During the Dark Ages, Galileo's life was all but ruined by the Catholic hierarchy because he dared to publish his scientific findings that the sun, and not the earth, was the center of the solar system. Maybe you're familiar with his story. You know, human arrogance has plagued our species for millennia. And whether that arrogance states that we are the center of the universe or whether it's politically incorrect in the scientific world to study metaphysical topics, it's still arrogance. Never underestimate the human capacity for two things, denial and arrogance. They're astonishing. Astonishing. The bottom line is that many religions and every fundamentalist religion regards certain metaphysical topics as something bad. Interestingly, these include some things in the paranormal world, such as ghosts and spirits. They regard these generally as fallen angels or demons. And they, of course, admonish their followers to stay away from them. Anything of an occult nature, including Ouija boards, psychics, mediums, dowsing rods, tarot cards, seances, hypnosis, pendulums, they're all satanic. They're all from the devil. Well, this is obviously a belief system. And is it true? I mean, are all these different things from Satan, the devil? Well, it depends on what you believe, doesn't it? Here's a basic premise. If you believe it, then it's true for you. Whether it's true in the greater reality is a whole different story. But our beliefs are true for us. And so if we believe it, then it is true for us. Well, let's talk about a couple of these things. What about Satan? Does MCHS Church believe in Satan? And the answer is absolutely not. Satan is a religious construct designed to control and invoke fear and adherence by religious leaders over the centuries. He does not exist. And people say, well, isn't that a belief? Well, of course it's a belief. The burden of proof, though, is on the existence. You know, and it's the same with demons. You know, do you believe in demons? The church says no. They are a religious construct. You know, are there some spirits that are not so nice? Sure. Could there be non-human spirits who are malevolent? There could be. But the point is here is that these concepts such as Satan and demons, they are religious constructs created at a time when people didn't know how to explain certain things, and they are used for control. Another thing that goes along with this is possessions. Can people be possessed by these so-called demons? Well, there are many people who will tell you yes. There are many Christians who will say absolutely you can be possessed, and even they will probably admit it's not all that frequent, but they admit it can be done. And, of course, there's even some of these Christian evangelists who specialize in exorcisms. Well, you know, what are we to make of that? Well, as I've said many times, if you're self-possessed, you cannot become possessed by anyone or anything else. Can people be possessed by spirits? Well, yes, in a sense. Trance mediums do that all the time. They allow that, along with the help of their control spirit. They will allow that temporary possession. Well, can people be possessed by these demons? Well, how are we to explain some of these cases where people really seem to be possessed? You know, the thing that we have to rule out is human psychology first. You know, if it was that easy for these demons or spirits to possess people, why aren't we seeing that more? You know, I think what we're really seeing here is human nature, human psychology. And there have been so many cases where a person seemingly is possessed, but it's nothing more than their own inner demons that are possessing them. And this is the hypothesis to beat. So, no Satan, no demons. Another thing related to religion that I wanted to bring up, some people say, well, what do you worship? You know, if you're a religion, what do you worship? Well, we really don't worship anything or anyone. We don't believe in God. We believe in the divine nature of all living things, so we don't really worship anyone. That's why this program here is not listed as a worship service. You know, we teach that you, in essence, are divine. We teach that you contain all those things you need. You don't need anything outside of yourself to find your answers. It's all contained within us, so therefore there is no need for worship. There's another point on belief and religion, too, that I want to hit before I move on to science. What about sin and perfection? Well, if you've listened to me for any length of time, you know my position on perfection. Are we perfect? Absolutely. Without question, you are perfect. You are perfectly yourself. You know, perfect people are better today than they were yesterday. Perfect people are perfectly themselves and getting better. There's nobody like you on this planet. You are perfect. Well, what about sin? You know, that's a word that I crossed out from my vocabulary better than 12 years ago. I don't do sin. Sin is a, sin's an evil word. Remember that. You know, a sinner. I mean, think about that. When you think he's a sinner, she's a sinner. What does that tell you about that person? It is nothing more than another attempt to devalue and denigrate the individual by religion. You're never good enough. You are a sinner. You need God's grace. You need somebody to smile on you sitting up there on the throne because you are a sinner. You know, it's deplorable. No wonder people have crappy self-esteem. Just pisses me off thinking about it. Okay, I probably shouldn't have said that on a radio program, but it does. All right, so forget sin. It's all a belief system. Strike that word from your vocabulary. So for religion, we see some different things here. Belief, that's the thing I'm talking about here. If you believe it, then it's true for you. And if you don't believe it, then it's not true for you. Let's talk about science and belief. And I'm laying a foundation here to talk about remaining grounded. Science takes a dim view in general of anything that's not based on objective, empirical, and reproducible evidence. This is the big thing, right? And this, of course, includes metaphysics. As a result, science is quick to denounce a number of disciplines, including metaphysics, as, quote, pseudoscience, unquote, or non-science. Pseudoscience basically refers to anything that might appear to be scientific, but has no scientific basis or is not reproducible in using the scientific method. Among the fields that science considers to be pseudoscience are astrology, cryptozoology, psychokinesis, ESP, ufology, parapsychology, psychology, psychoanalysis, chiropractic, alternative healing, homeopathy, hypnosis, crystal and faith healing, anything religious, of course, the polygraph, and many others. It's funny. Some of those you probably didn't realize. I mean, psychology, you think, well, that's not a pseudoscience. Well, depends on who you ask. A lot of scientific or scientist types believe that it is soft science. And, you know, we all know that chiropractors are not, quote, real doctors, unquote, are they? You know, I can't believe some of that. I mean, I've had some of the greatest chiropractors, some of the greatest doctors. I love them. How are they not a doctor? How do they not deserve that designation? They do. No different than any other doctor. So it's easy to see the metaphysical nature of the foregoing fields. I mean, those are obviously all metaphysical in nature to one extent or another. But are they truly pseudoscience? Well, if you use the term in terms of reproducing things, then a lot of times, yeah, it could be labeled that. But science is just one belief system of many, isn't it? And contrary to popular belief, science itself is not God. I know that's going to be, you know, a mind blower to some people. Science is not God and often has double standards too. And science uses metaphysics all the time. Talk about quantum theory and some of the recent discoveries. It's all based in metaphysics. Science, for example, is quick to discredit the mind's demonstrable ability for psychic ability, while at the same time, they theorize and infer that some unseeable, undetectable, unmeasurable, and atomless, quote, stuff known as dark matter exists, making up an astounding 80% of the universe. You know, it's amazing. Sometimes what science accepts has more to do with what is currently fashionable than what may or may not make rational sense. Another example is ufology. You know, science is quick to denounce any kind of extraterrestrial hypothesis. You know, they've sent out their probes to the universe, not to the universe, I should say, to the solar system, a little smaller, but still huge. They've sent their probes. You know, scientists in general currently have no problem accepting that the universe is probably teeming with life, which it undoubtedly is. I believe that, absolutely. They've discovered water on Mars. They've all but discovered life there due to the high methane levels that it can only be explained by bacterial life. They also highly suspect that an ocean exists on Enceladus, a tiny moon of Saturn, along with an assumption of probable life. Scientists generally accept the likelihood of intelligent life in the universe, even sanctioning the SETI project. Perhaps you're familiar with that, the search for extraterrestrial intelligence, which has been in operation since 1963, although recently it lost some funding, and I do not know its current status, so it may or may not still be operating. I don't know if it will stay turned off for very long, even if it is right now. Interesting, yet the scientific community in general cannot wrap their brains around the possibility that intelligent extraterrestrial life is visiting the Earth when we have as much or more compelling evidence for this as they have for other things. Here's another thing, black holes. Nobody's ever seen a black hole, and they will admit that. By definition, they're black. You can't see them. They suck all the light and everything into them. And yet they make all these hypotheses about black holes, saying that there's a singularity in the very heart of this black hole that is microscopic. And they're talking about how you cannot understand a black hole using Einstein's theory of relativity only. You have to also understand quantum mechanics to understand both of them have to be used to understand a black hole. And that's, of course, why they're looking for the theory of everything, where we can marry the standard hypothesis with quantum mechanics. The main point here is that just because science looks down upon something does not mean anything. It does not change a thing in the grand scheme of things. It's a shame they use this label of pseudoscience to apply to metaphysics, because that's what their stuff is based on. And frankly, you know, I don't even any longer believe in such a thing as pseudoscience to speak of. I mean, generally speaking, what is pseudoscience? It's like, you know, perhaps grossly irresponsible science. Maybe that could be. But it's just a label, and I don't even bother with it. Now, this having been said, I will concede that there are some in the metaphysical community whose beliefs are a bit fringy, a bit hanging precariously way out on the limb. And it involves pure speculation. A long time, the slightest poke brings it crashing down. And this is why it is imperative that the metaphysical beliefs that you choose are grounded in some type of rational thought. I'm going to talk a little bit more about that in just a second. Let me finish up the science thing that I wanted to say. True science, which is what we're looking for here, true science, it's open to all possibilities and methods. True science is about discovery. True science does not arrogantly approach the unexplained, that metaphysics is so often involved in, with preconceived notions. True science endeavors to find explanations that fit reported activity. That's true, but we're still open-minded. If we're really to discover what lies beyond this plane of existence, we also must not allow ancient belief systems born at a time when humanity attributed bad storms to angry gods to deprive us of potentially useful tools that color our perceptions with preconceived notions. In other words, we need to let that stuff go. Some of that stuff just doesn't make sense anymore. We need to let it go. We need to remain open-minded but grounded. And this is what I call the true scientific method, the open-minded search to discover and explain reality, whatever that means and wherever that takes us. And that's exactly why I'm doing this. It's why I'm doing this program. It's why I founded the church. It's why I founded the Metaphysical Institute. It's why I'm doing what I do. I want to know answers, just like you, I'm sure. We're all seeking that truth. So let's talk about remaining grounded. In the U.S. judicial system, there are three standards commonly used to decide cases. The first one is a lesser standard used in civil cases, and it's known as the preponderance or weight of the evidence, preponderance of the evidence. This phrase simply means that it's more likely true than not true. The second standard is an intermediate standard of proof used in both civil and criminal cases, and it's known as clear and convincing evidence. It's a bit more stringent than the first one, the preponderance of the evidence, but it's not as strict as the third level, which is the highest standard used in criminal cases, and it's known as beyond a reasonable doubt. That simply means no reasonable doubt in the mind of a reasonable person. So, what do these have to do with remaining grounded? Well, the bottom line is that in general, if we have a particular belief, or if we present a belief to someone else or a conclusion, we really need to be able to back it up with some kind of compelling argument for its validity. In other words, we need a logically defensible conclusion. This is even truer if you happen to be in the paranormal research or anomalous research field, because, you know, honestly, our reputation is on the line. If you're a metaphysician or a metaphysicist, whichever term you prefer, if you are that, you may very likely be in spiritual counseling or holistic life coaching or healing or some aspect of that. You know, your reputation's everything. It's just true in life. And so we need to be able to have a grounded basis for our beliefs. Not everything that is real, not everything that is accepted as real, even by the scientific community, can be proven objectively. Now, when we're dealing with metaphysics, wow, you know, we don't have objective proof on much. I'll tell you that right here. I mean, think of the human mind. How do you prove you have a mind? How do you prove you have consciousness? Well, I think, therefore I am, but what kind of proof is that? It's obviously very subjective in many ways. I mean, science can't locate the mind anyway. It's non-local. So rather than having hard proof like the scientific community would like, we don't have that. We need something. We need a standard, much like they have in the judicial system. We need a standard of accepted proof, and we need rational proof. That's the point. Rational proof that has a logically defensible conclusion. We need to have that. This will help us to remain grounded. What do you believe in the metaphysical field? There's so many fringe beliefs. Think about it. I mean, on this show, we've talked about reincarnation. Is it true? Well, the answer is I don't know if it's true. There seems to be some evidence to suggest it is, but then, you know, it's not very strong. You may have some subjective experiences that tell you it is real or tell you it's not real, whatever the case may be. What about near-death experiences? That's a subjective experience, isn't it? You know, if you've had one, do you need anybody to prove it to you? No. But if you haven't had one, well, you're going to probably be looking for some kind of compelling proof. Well, the compelling proof, the rational conclusion, the logically defensible conclusion, is in the myriad of stories of people who have had near-death experiences and who are reporting the similar types of events that happened during this NDE, and they don't know each other. They're from all over the world. Not only does that tend to provide rational proof that near-death experiences occur, it also would seem to provide a rational basis for belief in the afterlife or the life after life. This is what I'm talking about, rational proof. Think about some of your beliefs. Do you have rational proof for them? Do you have a logically defensible conclusion? Some people that know me know how much it takes to convince me of the presence of perhaps a spirit or a spirit person or my spirit advisor, Thomas. It took a lot, and it was cool. And I won't share that story on this particular show, but I will talk about it sometime on this show. I have a reasonable basis, a rational basis, to believe that he exists now, because too many unexplainable things have happened around it. That's what I'm talking about. You need to be able to have a rational basis, a logically defensible conclusion. One other thing that will help you to remain grounded is to attempt to falsify your belief. Now, what does that mean? Well, falsify is a term used in the scientific field where you basically try to prove a conclusion wrong. You're testing it. If you try to falsify it, you're trying to prove it wrong. If you can't falsify it, then it stands on its own merits. So why not use that technique? If you believe in a particular thing, you know, that there are 7 planes or 9 planes or 15 planes of existence before you get to be with God, you know, test it. Try to falsify it. What's it based on? Those are the kinds of things that we can do to remain grounded, down to earth. Don't be too quick to believe on scant evidence. That's faith, and faith is belief without evidence. Make sure in your own mind, have a logically defensible conclusion, and the subjective evidence that you get, like I had mentioned a moment ago on NDEs, near-death experiences, that may be sufficient for you. But to the extent possible, try to quantify it. So, to sum up what I've talked about for the last few minutes, embrace lifelong learning. If you stop learning, you start dying. If you're not growing, you're dying. Embrace lifelong learning. And that includes practical life skills. Learn the things that make your life better and easier. And those are the things we teach, not only at MCHS Church, but also at the Metaphysics Institute. Make sure what you believe is rational and can be backed up with a rational conclusion. Remain open-minded. Nothing wrong with that. Just not so open that, you know, as they say, your brains fall out. Remain open-minded with your feet on the ground. And that will help you to remain grounded. I hope some of these points have helped. I hope you found some benefit in them. What we're going to do next is I'm going to play a short musical piece, and then coming up right after that, we're going to do the Soul Light Meditation, Exploring the Deep Frontiers of your Limitless Self. This is a guided meditation session. It will be, this particular one is about just under 17 minutes. It's a time to sit back, relax, and hear an empowering message by way of self-hypnosis. The theme is on having more confidence. So stay with us. After I play this musical song, we'll come back and we'll get right into that meditation. Thank you. Okay, welcome back. We're going to do the guided meditation now. I'm just going to kind of ease you into it, and then I'm going to play it, playing a little bit of ocean stuff in the background just for a moment. This is the time that you sit back, you relax. If you have headphones, that's even better. If not, that's fine, as long as you can hear it. I'll start this in just a moment. For right now, just sit back, relax, take a deep breath in through your nose, hold it to the mental count of three, release it slowly through your mouth, and just settle. It's perfectly fine to relax. The cool thing about these guided meditations is this is your time, your moment. Nobody wants anything, no demands. It's for you. Take another deep breath. Hold on to it for a moment. And let it slowly out. And just feel yourself relax. I'm going to start the guided meditation. When it's over, I'll come back and help you come back to the world. Here we go.
This program is hypnotic in nature and is never to be experienced in a moving vehicle or other times when you need to maintain awakened consciousness. Welcome aboard your enlightening adventure. For if you don't yet see, you can create the life you always dreamed. This is your time to sit or lie back, more comfortably relaxed, perhaps reassured by the vision of the Native Americans who foresaw their own dreams come true, disclosed within by a spiritual guardian. These dreams to provide potent medicine, a guiding source of confidence in the future. And so these Indians ventured across the plains inside a grassy, wide, open terrain, searching for the esteemed sacred mountain. In tribal lore, the place life-transforming visions can be foreseen and explored. Surely, since we're all drawn by entrancing dreams, you too may take pleasure in venturing inside your own unexplored new frontier. For herein lies your creative life source, your own magical life force, ready to generate your most treasured imaginings. So even if you were once mystified by some misconceived, misguided notions, did not yet realize the energizing force of your dreams, then you can especially enjoy journeying inside your life force, only desiring to be summoned forth. So you are provided your freedom, effortless freedom, to transform the world with your own life-enhancing fantasies. Surely, you can enjoy not having to do anything. You don't even have to listen to me, because your inner, wiser self is exploring for you, your mind expanding, new adventure. For you know, when you're drifting within, inwardly, your deeper self can conceive visionary dreams. In those dreams, you can venture wherever you desire, even explore a grassy, wide, open terrain, faintly seen in the starlit night. As you walk across these great plains, for they're on the horizon, luring you nearer, sight the mountain range looming ever larger before you, the plateau silhouetted in the starry night. And when you reach the mountain's base, since the child within you enjoys a good adventure, why not place your hands on the mountain's side? skywards till so high you can finally reach the plateau and stand upon a grassy patch of land, warmly inviting you to lie. You might like to lie back within the soft, cushioning embrace, watching the stars twinkling in deepest space. Maybe recalling an earlier time when you searched these heavenly spheres and wondered what might be out there. The child still close to you, exploring life's new possibilities innocently, though quite right in believing you can savor the life you dream, perhaps even believing when you dream upon a star, your dreams come true. And as you see one star shining more brightly in the night sky, the warm breeze streaming inside your mistily drifting mind. Dreamy thoughts drifting upwards, skywards. Till when do you perceive beams of light streaming from afar, seemingly emanating from your one shining star? Beams streaming like a waterfall of light, falling right upon you. And soon you may sense falling right within you, bathing you in radiance, penetrating warmly, and enlightening you deeply inside. These light beams seemingly alive, wisely vaporizing those misconceived, misguided notions, delusions which may have once mystified you, may have once weighed you down, now evaporating easily and freely in the resplendent stream, leaving you lightened of the old, old debris, leaving you whole, wholeheartedly believing you can achieve your heart's dreams. A warm, reassuring feeling inside, a unified source of strength, of confidence in your dreams you are meant to savor. For when do you perceive complete acceptance for your deepest needs, as if from above some nurturing source of love were affirming to you, you deserve to achieve your dreams, as if one who is deeply concerned cares for you on intimate terms, were here with you within the radiant stream, someone only you alone may know, who this guiding force may be, surely always to reside here inside, providing warm acceptance for your deepest needs, the starry beams enlightening, purifying you, completely unburdened of the old, old debris. Sense your being thoroughly lightened, more buoyantly, freely drawn upwards, up within the uplifting stream, seemingly drawing you, luring you, ever further from the familiar life routine, till you're soaring skyward with lightning speed, right toward the star of your dreams, propelling you within these realms of your own imagination, deep within a parallel dimension. For when the radiant stream disappears, how soon before you're aware of a world unfurling before you, quite identical to the world you left behind, quite identical people too, though, do you begin to find your new world more genuine, more alive, enlightened? enlivened by the force of your commanding confidence to savor the life you dreamed, and presently experience your life to be. Is this a dream? Surely your experience savored more pleasurably, comfortably, may seem more and more real, really more like an episode from your own memory. For when do you perceive, as your body naturally breathes more slowly and deeply, emanating from a warm source inside, your own radiant stream of self-assurance, of confidence, expansively streaming through and through your being, believing freely, you need only reach out your hand and grasp your dreams, clearly here for you. For do you perceive the liberating feeling to create your life based on your will, to finally fulfill your life's real potential, your confident, deeply instilled belief, likely leading you to recall an occasion from your world before when you also experienced some personal triumph, an occasion when you really came through and achieved an earlier dream, here too, drawing forth your warm self-assurance with each breath, deep, deep, streaming through you, leading you to achieve freely, precisely what you deeply believe and demand your life to be. Perceive again your commanding sense of confidence, the feeling a friendly universe desires you achieve, your dreams meant to be, the same feeling revealed too in your starry night adventure. Surely you can always recall these all-embracing feelings of once and coming to be triumphs, leading you forward with complete confidence, right through any challenge your future might present. For as your body naturally breathes more deeply, you need only envision your commanding dream, the life you demand, a foregone conclusion coming to be. For how soon before you sense once more, warmly emerging from your heart's core, ardent belief streaming radiantly through you, the absolute assurance you can do whatever it takes to make your dreams come true. So any life challenges are simply your invitations to become stronger, more resourceful in your solutions. So-called mistakes along the way, your opportunities to learn more, hardly touching your fundamental core of inner belief. For within you lies a persevering and persistent spirit, particularly on those challenging occasions, your magical source inspiring you with the solutions you need, heartening you with your far-reaching conviction. I can live my life as I demand my life to be, for with each breath deep, deep sense emerging forth warmly, your self-assurance radiantly streaming out outwardly, now all about and surrounding you, all the confidence you feel, your own potent energy field, positively an attractive force coursing out outwardly, resonating with the universe's creative forces, drawing good fortune right towards you. For how soon before you realize just the right opportunity be surprised, too, when others are charmed, captured by your alluring dream, naturally drawn toward your self-assurance inside, for they admire the force of your positive conviction, your enthusiasm, your passion for life, your eyes shining with expansive vision, and desire only to support you and give you a hand, perceiving in your intriguing certitude they too can achieve their own dreams. Yes, in the tradition of the Native Americans, your guardian has heartened and renewed you with a transporting, life-transforming vision, one composing potent medicine. So when sensing deeply in your commanding expectancy, I can live the life I dream, now demand my life to be, then each new morn in your mirror view, now surrounding you, a new radiance, an aura of confidence, enlightening all these new life opportunities for you to satisfy your deepest needs. Surely, the more your true nature was once denied, today, as you believe freely in your dreams, the more you can be thoroughly gratified, since you highly treasure your life, asserting your birthright to savor the enriching life for which you were born. For you need only sense inside a warm, nurturing presence, your source of love, of total acceptance.
Now as you relax, just take another deep breath, coming back to full awareness. One, feeling good, on top of the world. Two, feeling just excellent. You were perfect. Three, eyes beginning to just open, feeling very positive. Four, coming around even more. And five, you are back. Eyes open wide, feeling on top of the world, feeling incredibly confident. Knowing who you are and why you are who you are. Folks, I appreciate you tuning in tonight. This part of the program is beginning to wrap up. Next week, I'll have another interesting topic. And by the way, if you have a message, you're a metaphysician or a spiritual counselor or psychic or whatever you do, if you have a message you'd like to share with the audience, you'd like to come on as a guest, I'd love to have you. Especially if you're a student of the Metaphysics Institute, just let me know. If you like what you're hearing, I invite you to join the Metaphysical Church of Humanistic Science. If you're not already a member, you can find us on the web at mchschurch.org. If you'd like to learn more about metaphysics, visit metaphysicsinstitute.org. That wraps up this program. Stay tuned for Dr. Vicky's Psychic Perspective coming up at the top of the hour. This is Doug Kelly encouraging you to listen, think, learn, grow, and live. Have a great week.
This has been Empower the Spirit with Dr. Douglas Kelly. To learn more about the concepts presented in this program, visit mchschurch.com. To take a metaphysics course or to get your metaphysics degree, visit metaphysicsinstitute.com.
Power of the Spirit is a production of the Metaphysical Church of Humanistic Science, Incorporated.
This is the MCHS Educational Network. Please visit us at mchschurch.org.
This is Dr. Vicky's Psychic Perspective on the MCHS Educational Network. And now, Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Dr. Vicki's Psychic Perspective. You will see at the top there a phone number, 714-459-3973. You are most welcome to give us a call and join us. Sorry, I had to turn off my... I had a little echo going on. I apologize for a little delay there. Again, you're welcome to call in and join us. If you have a question, something, an experience you've had or having, I will do my best to tune in, see if I can help you out with that. Every week I've been joining Dr. Kelly and coming in behind his show and really enjoying his programs, I might add. And the last week and this week, I've asked him to join in with us also so that, you know, a little more feedback, and he's just a fun kind of guy.
Absolutely. Gotta love me.
So that being said, if you also have a question for Dr. Doug Kelly, feel free to pose your questions. Something that has been happening with Doug and myself over the last number of weeks is, without any foreshadowing and discussion, we are tuning in to have very similar subject matter. And we are commenting on that just prior to the show on a chat that his topic was primarily about staying grounded, which is precisely this afternoon what I thought I'd like to address with everyone is about being grounded. So very exciting, the flow of the show.
Yes.
I'd like to share a story that came about, and I have to preamble it a bit to tell you that I had a wonderful apprentice teacher, my mentor from 1976 to 1979, who taught me a lot of the old ways of being a reader. Because she would say, anyone can read tarot, anyone can read teacups. Very few people know how to be with people. So that would be the key. And a lot of things that she would teach me was about business, how to have ethics, the morals, the and so on. But particularly about staying grounded. Because when you're with people and you're doing this kind of work, it's you're mingling energy. So she would say, and her view back then was that a lot of readers would get sick because they didn't know how to clear their energy. They don't know how to release the energy when you've mingled with people, whether you're a healer, a reader, in whatever kind of work, counseling work that you might do with people, you've exchanged or intermingled energy. And she would say, if you don't know how to cleanse that energy, it can get kind of blocked or locked up in your own body. Now, again, I'm an observer also. I like to observe. I like to, study and kind of test things out for myself. So one of the things that happened just about a little more than 15 years ago, which was extraordinary, that proved to me about how we mingle energy, kind of went like this. I had heard of a new business that was using radio wave therapy for healing work. It was some retired brothers had gone to great lengths to have this as their retirement effort, and they would have people come in, sit down, they would take a photograph, and whatever means, because you don't know what kind of means they're using to test it out, like kind of how they assess you. But one of the things that we did was I decided I'm going to go in there, because then they would kind of set up all the frequencies and colors and so on, go into healing. So I went in there. I didn't tell them what I did for a living. I didn't tell them anything about me. Had my photo taken. And I came back at a later date to have an assessment and decide whether or not I wanted to proceed with any kind of treatment. More than anything, I was observing. Well, lo and behold, when I went back there and sat with this fellow, he had these whole sheets of things that were typed out that he had said that I had issues in my body. And so I listened very conscientiously. Now, I'm pretty self-aware, and I know my body pretty well, but nothing he was saying I could relate with, nothing at all, except it dawned on me everything he was saying was about a client I'd had within at least the 2 weeks previous to the photograph. Very astounding. Right down to you have problems with your reproductive organs and your uterus and so on. Now, I didn't have those body parts anymore, so I knew it wasn't me, except maybe he's seeing that they're not there. But I had just worked on a woman who was pregnant, and I very rarely do hands-on healing work, but she was having such a struggle with her lower back that I was just doing hands-on and stretches with her to help her out. And I found that so fascinating that I had not yet learned to fully clean my body out. So psychically or otherwise, they had tuned in to all the client's energies that were still in residue in my body. So in a little while, I'll get to talking about how we can clean the body and how we can get better at that. But we have a caller waiting. I just saw that Doug and I have a little side chat going on here, and he said there's a caller, Doug.
Yeah, go ahead. 863 area code. What's your first name?
Hey, Gregory. How you doing this evening?
Hey, Gregory. Good.
Good. Hi, Gregory. You have a question?
Dickey, what a pleasure to talk with you.
Well, thank you very much, and you also, Gregory.
Thank you. I'd like if you would tune in about my job. I've put some applications out, and I'm just wondering if you feel those are going to produce anything or if I'm going to need to stay where I'm at. What's your thoughts on my working conditions?
August. Just like that, August. When's your birthday, Gregory? Just give me the month. I'm sorry, 10?
10-1-62.
Let me just check something out here.
Sure.
I'm just going to do something with numbers. We're in 2011. I think that this is a good month to put the word out there.
Okay.
But I think you're likely going to get the job change August. And I really want you to be in touch with us in August and let us know, because that's my first impression. I just wanted to double check some numbers here and see what kind of a year you're in.
Okay.
You do better working with people, Gregory. You do better working with the public. And I think that's something that even if you had clients or you can interact with people better, you don't necessarily do well isolated. You know, and I think you're making some shifts that whatever job, so what I'm saying is whatever job that you are looking at, if you can look at the positions that would have you dealing with people, that's going to be more successful for you.
Okay, that sounds great. I am a teacher, so I'm wondering if I'm going to stay in the field.
You know, you could very well stay in the field, but in a different capacity.
Okay.
So rather than dealing with young people, more people, your peers.
Okay.
Does that
great.
Make sense?
Absolutely.
So hang in there. Something, you'll get the word in August.
Sounds great. Thank you so much for taking the call.
Well, thank you for calling in.
Thanks, Gregory.
You bet. Take care, Doug.
You too.
I am just reading here. Camille has written in. Her birthday is 8/14/1958. Just going to check something out for you, Camille. Oh, my. You're a little powerhouse. Camille, you always feel as though you're pending. There's a couple of things that are at work here for you. This is an 8-year. Next year is a 9-year. Now, your birth path number is a 9. So when that lines up, your birth path and the year you're in, it means to say your relationship with the world is going to change. So you have a big year coming up next year. It's a very good year for you to make a career change if you were going to. So that would be an important thing to work toward. Now, when you say you're always feeling pending, I think that this is all going to line up. When you have a birth path of 9, you're an exceller. You like to achieve. You like to do very well at what you do. And sometimes you might be foreshadowing things a little bit. So that pending. There are 7 7-year cycles that take you up to the age of 49. At 49 to 56 is a 1 cycle again. So if you think that in a way, it's like being reborn. So that 49 to 56 and that the age that you're in and that particular age category, you're in this redefining, rebuilding. So there'll be a lot of changes coming up to you. 9 is a karma number, a big karma number. So it means to say that you're always in some kind of a resolve or helping other people with resolve of karma. You have to be careful that you don't take on other people's karma. That would be the thing. So I hope that's answering that for you in that way. So on that note, I'm just going to carry on. It's a perfect introduction to cleaning your energy out, how to clear energy and stay grounded to be in the present as much as possible. There's very many techniques to keep your energy unto itself and to stay grounded. But the ones that I find are particularly useful are colors in light. And so if a white light, you know, all those chakra lights through the body equals white. So even that breathing in and bringing it through your body, the breath all the way to your diaphragm and exhaling white is just an instantaneous way to clear any residual energy away from your body. Now, a technique that was taught to me many, many years ago is to take 4 breaths. And each time you take a breath in, it gets deeper and expands lower into the diaphragm and just exhale. So the breath is critical in any kind of grounding, any kind of cleansing that you're doing. It's taught in yoga. It's taught in everything. It doesn't matter what you do, whether it's athletics or martial arts or yoga. The study is the breath, and it really is critical to cleansing as well. You want to clean your energy. One of the other things that I do in my reality is I kind of put all those spirits on notice. Like when people come to me, like, you're bringing your energy to me, you're bringing all your spirits, all the spirits that walk with you, and you bring them into my space. So I say, okay, everybody, you got to go. So I wouldn't say goodbye just to you. I say, okay, everybody out, time's up. And I send them on their way so that you walk in whole with your spirits on your way. So there's nothing left behind in my space. I also make a conscious effort not to remember readings. And I know that, you know, it kind of sounds bonkers. I figure I got enough files to remember. But one of the other great things that Magda, my mentor, imparted to me is that you could read for someone today and you could read for somebody tomorrow and it will be completely different. The moment you acknowledge something, it begins to change. Not only that, it's a new day, it could be a fresh outlook, a different angle, it can be any number of things. So it's to just to stay as centered as you can and not clutter your mind, so to speak. So I do remember the feeling. Once I tune in again to someone, I remember the feeling, but I really work hard at not remembering the details. If I know you long enough, of course, I'm going to know a little bit more. I did know a reader many years ago who had a photographic memory, and I just thought I would go bonkers because she would remember people's names, their kids, and who lived where, and it was very overwhelming to me. I thought, oh, I don't want that much information. So again, the breath is important, white lights. I send people spirits on their way. You may find your own technique, something that works for you, that would help you in your cleansing. So feel free to give it a go. But if you're not feeling like you're still yourself, it's because there's residual energy. Now, I've been just peeking in on the chat here, and I guess that's Franklin. Franklin wants to know if he will ever meet somebody. You know, Franklin, it's a really interesting thing about accuracy in the cosmos. When you say, I would love to know if I will ever meet someone, you have to articulate it just a little bit better, because we can assume to know you mean in a relationship way. The cosmic is going to take you literal. I've learned this over the years. Are you going to meet somebody? Oh, you meet somebody at the corner store. You know, you meet people throughout your day, but be specific. When you put that energy out to the universe for projection, you can say something like this. I am going to do your numbers in a minute, but say something like this. I am ready and receiving of a relationship with someone who is on the same vibrational frequency as myself. So let's rephrase that a little bit. You say it to the cosmos, I am willing, able, ready to receive a relationship with someone who is on the same vibrational frequency as myself. Don't just ask for a carte blanche relationship, because you can have anybody. You know, you can go out and pick somebody anytime, but it's not going to be the right one. You want the right one. So I can assume to know what you mean, but when we project to the cosmos, we must articulate clearly. And this is a flaw with language now, because a lot of us are confused and we don't always know what each other is talking about. We miss a lot of words. We miss a lot of phrases. We misunderstand. We're always paraphrasing. The cosmic does not ask for a paraphrase. So it's got to be very, very clear. So you are 06/10/1970. You're a birth path of 6. And we're in a 2011. You know, look, it can happen anytime, but as tuning in on chat is a little bit difficult, I'm going to admit that, but when I get your birthday and I see your name, I can feel your energy a little bit. I'm going to say within the next 4 years, Franklin, because it lines you up to have a better walk in the world, so to speak. So within the next 4 years, I see you in a relationship with someone. But that's not to say you can't meet them tomorrow or meet her tomorrow. You know, you can meet the someone anytime, but I think the commitment or that bridging coming together will happen in 4 years. Now, Franklin, I'm kind of compelled to say something else to you. This is somebody that you could have crossed paths with before. That doesn't mean you locked eyes. You know, it's like when you look in somebody's eyes, you just know. But it could very well be. It could be, you know, a woman who's in a circle of friends that's over there you've heard about, but you've never met. So in some kind of way, I think you've already crossed paths. So I hope that helps you out. So yeah, look, I'm just saying, it's there, it's coming, hang on. I think you just got 4 years yet. You know, this is when I always wish I could say, oh, yes, you're going to race out and meet them tomorrow. But that's just, I got to go with what I'm seeing. So all the best to you, Franklin. So no other callers at the moment, Doug? How are we doing? All right. So we're still on? Okay. I want to talk a little bit more about cleansing and for you healers out there and how to stay grounded. One of the things that is an error, if you will, in doing any kind of healing work is to take on someone's energy. Now, it's kind of like if you're doing hands-on healings, it's like you want to take the energy out of them and give it back to the cosmos somehow. That's not correct. You're going to get some of that stuck in your body. You're going to lose yourself in that feeling. So if it is that you're doing hands-on healing work, for instance, then let the energy come from wherever, you be the conduit, and then it gets given to your client. So when you feel that that's completed, then give it back to the cosmos. Just let it, and again, do your own breathing work, do your own centering work, so that you don't keep that residual energy in your body. You can find yourself getting very sick. And I tell you, I made the error. Back in the mid-70s, I would, of course, whatever I was feeling at that time, I would go ahead and, you know, I was working with somebody one day and I put my hands on their shoulders. And it was so important to me that they get rid of their migraine. It was so important to me that I help them. Then I ended up taking that energy from them, and I got the headache. And that was painful to try and get rid of that. So I had to do a little investigating to kind of, what did I do? Well, you see, it's measured by intent. It was important to me that they get better. And I had to learn that it cannot be important to me. It has to be important to the client. Everything that takes place is important to the client. So that's between the cosmos and the client and whatever's occurring. I have nothing to do with it except to be the bridge. I'm a magnifier of sorts, if you will. So we're conduits. We are not we're not to take it on and think we can regenerate that and spit it out in some other form. So if that kind of makes sense and helps some people, because to me it's a very important consideration to make when you're working with energy and you're working with other people's energy. This is another thing, of course, that I tell people in matters of relationships, and if you have been intimate, there's some old teachings from a long time ago that I still kind of hold true by because I've observed it. Is when you mingle like body fluids or, you know, more intimate energy, that energy generally stays around for up to 3 weeks. So if you imagine 3 weeks of somebody, and I mean, everybody's had that feeling, you know, your first time out on a date and you're very excited and your first time with somebody and the next day you don't feel yourself, you know, you're kind of out of sorts, you kind of, you know, and you feel a little giddy or, you know, little things of paranoia. It's because you're not alone in your body. So you got to remember that you're sharing energy. So again, breathing is critical. White lights can help. The other thing I will tell you is apple cider vinegar is has very good properties for cleaning auric energies. Now, you can even drink it if you can stand the taste. I can't do that myself. But if you consider to have a tablespoon of that, it's a really good cleanse, very good for the body. But to have a bath in about half a cup of apple cider vinegar will even absorb radiation. You know, at least that's the claim of it. And at the very least, if it's psychological and it works, I say go to, you know. But it's a very good absorbent of negative energy or, radiation kind of thing. And any other kind of residual energy that you might have been exposed to that you feel you want to clear away. I'm not one for perfumes and all these other scented things. I like things that are more earthy and stuff. And besides, apple cider vinegar washes off like nothing. You don't smell like vinegar. You don't. So Camille is asking a question in chat. When dealing with someone who is mentally ill, who believes herself to be demon-possessed, I fear... Okay, you're saying... Is that right?
Vicki, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
My okay. Mic is goofing up on me again.
Okay, I got you.
Before we deal with Camille's question,
yes.
Let's expand just for a moment on what you were talking about a moment ago about taking on somebody's energy, not taking on, because that actually deals with Camille's question as well. And I just wanted, what you said was correct. What I wanted to expand on, just to offer a thought or two, is even if you're not doing, quote, energy healing, unquote, even if you're doing spiritual counseling or coaching or something like that, let me first say, we can take on somebody else's energy that way as well. And we can get so empathetic that we end up shouldering their burden.
Absolutely.
And that, in essence, is the definition of codependence, or one of them. And so we have to be careful that we don't go so far as to we take responsibility for the other person. You had mentioned that with the migraine thing.
Yeah.
And so I just wanted to interject that, and that's so important, especially because so many people in the metaphysics field are in it not only to learn and to grow themselves, but also to help the world. And that's the beautiful thing about this field. I mean, I love it. I've met so many people who want to be a part of the solution, not the problem, who want to leave the woodpile a little higher than they found it. And that's a beautiful thing, but we have to be careful to manage our own energy. Now, leading into Camille's question, I'll let you go for it, but I'd be happy to also...
But thank you for injecting also and reinforcing that, Doug, because it is a really important thing that we don't attach to other people's successes or their failures. And our emotional investment in wanting to be of service and wanting to make a difference... I cannot know ahead of time whether I've made a difference, and I can't be reassured during a session with someone that I've been accurate. I just let it go. I just trust that whatever is taking place is needed, you know, and I always say I'm in it for the long haul. So, you know, whether I'm liked in that moment or not isn't the point. It's taken a lot of years to develop that point. You know, it doesn't just happen overnight and say, oh, I know how to do this healthfully. It really does take attention and self-study to know that. Now, I am reading a question, Camille. Fear the draining of your energy in dealing with somebody who's kind of obsessed with being demon-possessed? And do I ever say no to healing or working with somebody? Okay, this is two parts. I'm going to answer your last question first. As I'm a reader primarily, I have really tried to focus on not doing too much healing work with people because I don't like to, you know, stretch myself too far. So I prefer to do spiritual counseling and reading with people. I never say no to somebody. Now, my old teacher would say, a reader especially comes to you with their life. And if you say, oh, and I've debriefed a lot of people about this. When somebody goes to a reader and the reader says, oh, I can't read for you, that client thinks they're going to die. That's the fear. Oh, she doesn't see my future. Maybe that's going to die. That means I'm going to die. So she would say, some people you can't read for very well, but you do your best. And I'm going to say this because you're all students and you're going to come up across this, so I'm going to share what my teacher said. If you have the very rare occasion where you draw a blank, make it up. She would say that there's a pretty good chance you're going to get something in there right, and if you're perceptive, then you've been able to help them in some way. But to say no to somebody in that way is more damaging than to just at least create something that makes them feel better. In healing work, by the way, I have said no to a couple of people because they irritated me, and I just felt like we were on wrong wavelengths and I'm not suited to you. That's fair. So that's a different thing. In the healing work, I think it's better to be diplomatic in a way to say, I'm not the one who can best serve you with what you're dealing with. And you can say it in a way that's firm, that they're not going to argue with you, because people would say, but Camille, I like you best. And you can just say, I just don't feel I'm serving you best. I think that there's things going on in your body that, hey, take the high road, you say, that exceeds my capabilities and exceeds my capacities. And then they're on their own. Somebody who believes themselves to be demon-possessed, there's usually something going on Camille, I'm so with you here. I don't know why. I am very good with people who have disturbances. And a lot of the other readers over the years in my particular area would get exhausted with a client, and then I always kind of say jokingly, send me their nut cases. But it's rare, but it does happen. And I'm just good with that. But when somebody really has a problem that we know we can't help with, that it is just a little bit not quite right, even delusional, then it is better to try to direct them in a different way. Maybe you want to make a phone call to, if you know anybody who works in psychology or works in other fields, that you could. But I'm going to tell you, I have met people I call vampires. And it's kind of metaphoric. You know, I think that's where the
energy word vampires.
Exactly. So not the blood-sucking kind, but energy vampires. I have read for really wonderful people, and when they leave, I'm exhausted. And I call them the negative positives, that there's something inside that's negative. And I've really had to give energy to, you know, I've really had to, you know, work a little bit harder to be with them in that time. So I have to, at that point, after they leave, I have to make sure I have something to eat, which is, by the way, another way I keep myself grounded. I eat small amounts more often. I generally do not eat within about an hour before I go into sessions with people. But after they leave, I eat crackers or snacks or something to keep my body grounded. And you'll notice pretty much in every culture that there are prayers, then feast. You know, prayers, then food. So it's to keep the body grounded. So this is something that you can do. But energy vampires, they're there. Absolutely, they're there. I don't think they even know that. I think some people might be a little bit conscious of that because they're emotional and they really need that extra emotional validation. But that is all part of the process. And if you're in this to continue to serve and help people, you're going to have to learn to discern the ones you can help, the ones you can't. And, hey, it's fair to me that they go to someone else. So, Doug, you wanted to make a comment?
Yes.
I also wanted to comment on Camille's question too. A couple of things that you've mentioned. I'm not even sure it's a she, nor where I got that.
We can assume that.
Yeah, it's as good as a he. So, oh, herself. Okay, that's where I got it. She's mentally ill. That's number one. You know, a big red flag for somebody who's in spiritual counseling or holistic life coaching. One of the things that students will learn in the degree program on this counseling and coaching is some of these types of things. So mental illness, you have to ask yourself, are you trained and capable of dealing with such a thing? And furthermore, are you licensed by the state? You have to be careful with some of these different cases. Yes, the spiritual counselor, the ordination, the church affiliation, all that can cover some of it, but what's best for the client? And for somebody to believe themselves demon-possessed, that's also indicative of some psychological issues, not necessarily mental disorders for everybody who might feel that way. But in this case, it's obviously part of the pathology. So in terms of declining clients, I think, Vicki, you've stated it very clearly that if it's fine to refer them to somebody else. And you,
yes.
This is really no different. This kind of a client, she's added some comments about clinging to her, high maintenance, energy vampire, that sort of a thing. There's what you are dealing with here is essentially a boundary violation. It may be unwitting on the person's part, especially if they're mentally ill. They may not even realize it. You know, in those cases, you have to do what's right for the client and yourself. So there's nothing wrong with referring. There's nothing wrong with distancing. It's no different than pretty much any other relationship. Just because they think that you're the one, you're the only one that can help them, well, you know, that's probably not true. There are many people, but there are a few who can help anybody. But the point I'm trying to make is do what's right. Do no harm, do right, but also do right for yourself.
You know, one of the things, another thing that my mentor Magda would say is that if you want to know about people also, it's a lot to be said for culture. Now, this isn't racism, this isn't prejudice, it's the study of a culture. And on this particular note, I will say that there are many cultures that have belief systems. And I'm very accustomed, because I am adopted by an Indian nation, a clan. And in Indian country, it's very common to hear somebody feel like they have bad medicine put on them. And they feel like they are demon-possessed or, you know, a series of bad things. Now, there's two things that I tell people. First of all, is to respect the culture. It doesn't matter what we believe. It only matters what they believe. The second thing that I really emphatically put across to people, no matter who they are of any culture, if you have a fear for that energy to attach to, it will grow. So if you overcome a fear, if you come to terms with the fear and you just put a white light around you, no negative energy can affect you. So even if somebody comes to you and says, you know, they're from another culture that says, I feel like bad medicine's been put on me, you say, well, it can only affect you in any way if you have a fear. If you have a fear that, and I'm glad I just read your chat there, Camille, if you have a fear that this energy can attach to, then it's just going to magnify. So you say to her, no fear. Go to that place of no fear. Be brave. Put a white light around you, and it has no power. Zero power. Now, if in the event, if only if you are authorized, Camille, because this is when, if it is something cultural, you refer them to somebody of their own culture. It's not for your, it's not your deal. You refer them to somebody of their culture if you can, or tell them, seek out help in that culture. Because they would do, in their view, again, exorcisms and other things that, hey, what do I know? If it's working for you, I say, good, I take an Advil if I need to, if it works for me, you know, because we're all in a process. But I feel the least that I can do is educate somebody about fear, because fear is the gremlin. Fear is the one thing that will get people every time. I have no fear. So I say, if people want to put bad magic, I just invite them in for tea, you know, because you'd be hard pressed to do that, because I know who I walk with. I know who I am. And, you know,
are you self-possessed?
Absolutely.
So you can't become possessed by anyone or anything else.
That's right. That's right. But it's about intent and knowing who I am, that I do no harm. I have, and I say this, you know, humbly, I never have an intended thought to bring harm. I'm a defense. I'm a warrior. I'll take it on, but I don't look for trouble. You know, I'm a service in the world, and I want to help, but I also know that, you know, a very logical, sensible way isn't going to always help people. It send them to their culture, send them to people who, and I have training in these things, and I do know what to do in the areas of magic and the claims to. I know how to work that, and I'm comfortable in these things. But it's fear. So the best thing, Camille, you can, you know, say to her, and maybe this just kind of wraps it up for you, is say, I think you have a fear in there that this energy can attach to, but you are better served with someone else, and I don't know if I can help you find somebody. But, you know, if she needs to go and, you know, go into an Aboriginal community and get an exorcism or go in a ceremony or a prayer ceremony or something, good. I mean, then you've helped somebody on their way. That's our job. We help them on their way. And if you're in the healing profession, you support people in that moment with whatever you can do within the capacity you can do it, and you'll let it go. So I'm glad you'll do that, and I'm glad you feel a little bit better, Camille. Anything you wanted to add in there, Doug, before we...
No, I think that I think we've covered it. Just do no harm, do the right thing, use your head, and look at it in a practical, realistic manner. Can't, you know, we try, but we can't help the world. You know what I mean? We can't help everybody.
No.
So we have to help those who we can, and that's the beauty of the whole thing. We all help those within our sphere of influence to the extent possible. People get helped everywhere.
Yeah, absolutely. And as long as it's a process and we're all in progress, that's what we look for. But just to remind everybody, if you do want to call in, now would be the time. There's not too much time left in the show. So if you'd like to, the number's at the screen again, 714-459-3973, or feel free, just as a few of you have, to write on the chat. And I see Sean's done that. If I give you my birth date, will you see if there's any feeling or message or particular energy that you see around me? It's mysterious, vague. All right. I like mysterious and vague, Sean. So let me just...
Shauna.
Is it Shauna? I'm sorry. It says Sean Treese, so I know now.
You know all things. All things are known to you, except the things which you do not know.
Which can be sizable. It is very true. The older we get, the less we know, because we see how much there is to learn. Mm. I say very often, I probably know level 3 of 3 million levels to learn about. So I'm like this infant, you know. Mm-hmm. You have your birth path is a 6, Shauna. And I'm going to see what year you're in. Oh, you should be really putting stuff together for yourself this year. You're in a 9 year, and... you know, I do consider some of the letters in your name, although I didn't do your name number. But I look at a few things and just kind of do my best to tune into some of your energy. Being in a 9 year is fulfillment, achievement. There's an interesting thing about the number 9. It's the only number that can cancel itself out. So I always say it's the number, if you want to learn about shape-shifting and being invisible, that's the number to work with. 9, if you add up all the numbers and then reduce it to 1, you know, it'll come out the same as if you just look at the whole thing, cancel anything that adds up to a 9, and just add the remaining, you'll get the same results. So I hope I explained that well. But being a 9, you might feel overlooked sometimes, so you're going to have to find your voice. 9 can be very visible, or it can be overlooked. So that's just something that you want to work with. So don't take it to heart if you feel like you're not being noticed. It just means that that's an opportunity for you to find your voice. Now, sure, we could say that in a generality, but you're in a fulfillment year. This 9 is about achieving, fulfilling, enlightenment, illuminating. So a lot of things that you've been working on in the last 9 years, for instance, but I'm going to say the last 3, especially the last 3 years, are starting to work out for you. So don't let those little moments beat you up. Just say, no, I will be heard. Find a good way to present that, get it across, and you'll do just fine. So this is a fulfillment time, and keep going. Just keep going. Cindy, 02-26-1960. All right, Cindy. Let's see here. You are a birth path of 8, and I'll just see what year you're in. Now, how I get that, I add up 2-26-1960. I just canceled out the 9s and added a 2 and a 6, and I got an 8. Now, I could add it all up get the same result. So 2-26-2011 is the year that you're in. And that would be a 5. Well, 5s are very adventurous years. The thing about the 5, and just think of the sensibility to it. The only true numbers are 1 to 9. 5 is in the center. So center can feel trapped, or it leaps out to adventure. So I say when you're in a 5 year, it could feel just a little bit of a roller coaster. But you want to try to keep the roller coaster as balanced as possible. So instead of traveling way up the line and way down, you want to kind of stay on the line. So if you can know what kind of energy you're working with, say, you know, I'm not going to get too high. I'm just going to stay level, and then I don't get so low. So you might feel like you kind of want to bust out, you know, and just don't let that. I don't like the word depressed. I like oppressed. To me, depression is a medical term. Oppression is a spiritual term. So if you start to feel a little bit oppressed, just know that there is, you know, you're going to come back up, and it is a year to find your adventure. It's a year to find your spontaneity, risk-taking, that movement, because it wants to break out of the middle. It wants to move forward into the 6. So as you get into next year, which this is what I'll tell you, as you get into next year, it's going to be more public for you. It's going to be more community. You might be lining up better with family next year. This year it could feel just a little bit, you know, it's interesting as I'm saying this, I got this little sharp pain in between my shoulder blades. So I don't know if you have a little thing in your shoulders there, Cindy, too, but it may be that a little bit of pressure with family. But I think that's going to all smooth out. I think that next year you're going to feel like you're more in sync and communicating, being heard better, you're going to feel like you've got more movement in your life, more on your way. So I hope that makes sense to you in some way, and that works. But I'm more excited, if you really want to know, between here and 2014, the next 3 years. That's whatever it is you're building up to in 3 years, it's really going to accumulate and crescendo kind of thing. And that's when you're going to make all your real big power decisions. So that's when I think a lot of the transitions are really going to come to a head for you. So that's good. It says that I call this the escalator ride. This year, a little bit of a roller coaster, but then you start riding the escalator and it improves gradually and upward. So you're doing just fine. You're doing really well. As we talk about numbers, I'd just like to mention here about symbols. They're all just as critical. Symbols are, if you're going to study, of course, Reiki symbols, but everything symbolically is joined somehow by in every culture and historically. You find the thread. Instead of going to that particular culture and studying that, maybe just glean over the commonalities between all cultures. Then you'll find that you'll be picking out the ones that are constant. And that's kind of a good place to begin. So, and it'll have a direct relationship with numbers. Everything has a relationship. It totally fascinates me. Connecting those kinds of dots, just being a good observer of symbols, a good observer of numbers, knowing what kind of energy that reflects. Like 2011, that's a 4. 2011, that's a 4. 4, the Chinese call that the number of death. I call it the transformation. It's when everything does a big shift before it goes into that next adventure and then settles. So if you tell a story, you know, as it goes, from 1 to 9, there'll be a story. 1 is the beginning, 2 is the worker, 3 puts it together, 4 makes the change, 5's the adventure, 6 takes it in the community, 7 has to stop and, you know, kind of check all the T's and I's and, you know, make sure everything's okay. 8 educates, and 9 fulfills. Now, that's a very simplistic way of putting it, but that's to me the story of the numbers. Now, in the numbers, there'll be a story of animals. There'll be a story of symbols. And it's very exciting because along with that 4 where the Chinese say that's death, I call it change. For instance, the owl in a lot of cultures would say if you see an owl, it means there's a death coming, or they might translate that in a dream. I don't see it as death because I don't see death as an end, but I do see it as a transformation. I see it as the change, new beginning. So if it's very interesting. Anytime I've ever moved, an owl starts appearing, and that's just the way it works with me. I'm observant, and mind you, I do take a little bit, take notice that you only notice pregnant women when you're pregnant, and you only notice kids when you got kids, and you only notice. So we have to understand what we're all giving attention to. But I rarely have owls around, except under certain circumstances, and then when I say, oh. And I've been on the planet long enough to say that's consistent in my life. So there's something to it. When something starts appearing to me, I take notice of it. So symbols is a really extraordinary thing. Numbers, they're extraordinary. They just give lots of messages. So so does anyone have any other questions before we start wrapping it up here? It's been a very exciting show. We have 3 minutes, I'm told. So questions. I'm just going to pause for a moment and let somebody type if they need to. When you're dealing with energy, anybody else's energy, stay true to your own energy. Because I know how my mind works. I know how my body feels. I know when something's out of sync. And I know when something has been positive. Now, having said that, something that we had talked about quite a bit earlier about relationships, you could meet somebody, get very excited because it feels good, but it could also just be chemical. So we have to kind of think in dividing it into parts between spiritual, mental, emotional, and physical. And if you're looking for a partnership, all of those things should line up. But just because you're spiritually connected with somebody doesn't mean they're your life partner. And just because you're emotionally connected doesn't mean you have to get in a relationship. And just because you're chemically attracted to somebody, it doesn't mean that anything at all has to happen. So these are the things that we need to look at in ourselves to stay grounded so that we don't get off track. It's very easy to get off track. We're all human. And when you work, especially if you're working in the metaphysical field and you're working in the healing arts, and if you're in any kind of interactive service with people, it's important that you understand what's happening with yourself as it's going on. And it, just as this show is doing here, offering a venue for you to ask questions, to say, hey, this is a new one on me. I don't know how to deal with it. Here's another thing that I'm learning, or I've something that's been stimulated in myself. So these are all things that we can share with each other, and keeping ourselves grounded, keeping ourselves centered. Once again, I've really enjoyed tonight's show. We will be back next week, and I hope Dr. Doug would join us again next week.
Sure. The pay is so good.
Yes, indeed. Thank you very much, everybody. Thank you for your questions. Thank you for participating. Really enjoyed tonight. Again, Dr. Vicky's Psychic Perspective. And have a good week, and we'll see you next Sunday.